beginning of Parshas Vayishlach has the confrontation, the meeting, after so many years, between Yaakov and Esav. And of course, there was a great deal to investigate, a great deal to ponder with regards to the nature of this meeting. And even from the very beginning, from the opening words, Vayishlach Yaakov Malochim Lefonov, already there is a discussion. As we know, Rashi tells us, in his succinct way, Malochim means Malochim Mamash. Actual Malochim, actual angels, what we would call, in English, Malochim. In Hebrew, the word malachim, a malach can be an emissary. Angels are called malachim because they are the ultimate emissaries. The word malach is actually an embodiment of the word malacha. A malacha is a job, and a malach is someone whose existence is to perform that job. One could have understood that malachim means, and it is used throughout elsewhere in Torah, to refer to people who are emissaries, messengers. And here, for various reasons, Rashi explains that malachim are malachim mamish. Actually, this matter is discussed in the Medrash, Reishis Rabbah. And there, we actually find both opinions. There are those who say that malachim refer to people, messengers. And there are those who say that malachim are malachim mamish. Rashi, of those two opinions, has chosen, as he often has to do. Interestingly, just for the record, we should note that Unkelus is translated Ushalach Yaakov Izgadin. And Izgadin is actually the Aramaic for messengers. So Rashi and Unkelus are, well, in the vernacular they'd say they're not on the same page. That's actually not quite true, but they have taken two sides in this question, and so it is. Now, Pasuk A, as we move on, gives us one of the most famous Rashis. For Vayitzavu Samle Mor Kotom Mul Adoni LeEsav, this is what you should say to Esav: Ko Amar Avdecha Yaakov. Im Lavan Garti, so says Yaakov, Im Lavan Garti va'echar ad ata. I sojourned with Lavan, that's the correct translation, and I've tarried until now, Im Lavan Garti. And Rashi gives us two peirushim. The first peirush, Garti, is focusing on the lightweight connotation of the word Garti. It doesn't mean that I lived there for a short while, he was there for a long time. But it means, as a personality, lo na'aseisi sarva choshuv. I never became a heavyweight personality. I never became a going concern there. El Ager, I was only ever looked upon as a ger, as an outsider. They never really welcomed me in or gave me any type of prestige. And therefore, Ein Chokadai Lisnoosi Al Bircha Savicha. And therefore, you shouldn't worry about the brachas of that Yitzchak that I supposedly stole from you, Shebirchani Hevi Gevir La Achecha. The part of the brachos were to be a gevir, and I never became a gevir, lo niskaimobi. And the sum of farshim mean to finish the sentence, what Yaakov is saying is, because even so, Esav could say, well, okay, maybe they didn't work for you, but they could have worked for me. So you stole them and somehow ruined them. I should still hold it against you, because if I would have gotten them, then... But of course, by Yaakov calling him Adoni Esav and all of that, really what he's saying is, apparently, I wasn't successful in stealing the brachos because Yitzchak thought it was you, and therefore his intention was to bless you. So, and here you are, you're on top of the world, and I'm at the bottom of the world. So, apparently, I didn't end up doing you any harm at all. That's Peirush number one. Peirush number two is literally a different dimension. Davar Acher, the well-known Rashi, Garti, Bigematria Taryag. It is not only the Gematria, it is the same letters, Taryag, 613, Kilomar. Im Lavan Arosha Garti, Vitaryag Mitzvah Shamarti, I stayed with Lavan, but I kept the Tariq mitzvahs, v'lo lamadati mimasav haroim. He didn't affect me for the bad. Now, we should note, just in terms of perushim of Rashi, they're very different. Not only are they different, they seem to be almost in conflict with each other, because the tone is contrary. The first perush is certainly conciliatory, as if to say, please don't be angry with me, the brachas never were fulfilled through me, and no hard feelings, and that type of tone, very mild, looking to make up. The second perush, Tariq mitzvah shamarti, why should Esav be interested whether he's be keeping Tariq mitzvahs? High on Esav's list of priorities are not the ruchnius level of his brother Yaakov. Why is he saying that? He's saying that in order you should know who you're dealing with. I've been keeping Tariq mitzvahs, whatever that means. Of course, there's many mitzvahs that he can't keep, etc., etc. But as a principle, as a program, to be faithful to Tariq mitzvahs, and therefore, be careful who you reckon with. That's a very different message. Whatever happened to don't be angry with me? The first perush is don't be angry with me, and the second perush is don't start up with me. I mean, those are two quite different perushim. At this juncture, and if we don't ask this question, we haven't done justice to the Rashi, we have to ask ourselves, what was Yaakov expecting in terms of Esav receiving this message and deciphering this message? As if to say, when we see the word in Lavan Garti, we would translate it as, I sojourned with Lavan. Would we have intuited within the message of Garti is Tariq mitzvahs? I don't know. It happens to be that from the time we can speak, we know the Rashi. And so Garti becomes Tariq. Esav did not receive Yaakov's message with Rashi's Perush. Which means, when he hears the word Lavan Garti, he has to have been in a frame of mind where he looks at the word Garti and sees Taryag. Because if he doesn't get it, then why was it said? It can't be a kind of an internal circuitry of meaning within Yaakov, that he knows that it means Garti, but Esav will never understand. He must have been very interested in Gematrias. In order, at a time like this, especially as he's just now realized that Yaakov is actually alive, contrary to his son Eliphaz, who came back 22 years ago and told him that he killed Yaakov. So it's a time of turmoil. The presence of mind he must have had to have heard this message, Yaakov is still alive. Not only is he still alive, he's been with Lavan, and if you think about the letter formation of one of his words, you'll also conclude that he's been keeping Tariq mitzvahs. That's quite a lot to demand from Esav at a time like this, who, when he's emotionally upset, can't even call food by its name, but only by its color. Okay. Now the Malachim come back. Before we get to their return mission, a fascinating observation. All of these things, we call them nuances, we call them details, but they come together to make up the picture. And the more we investigate them, the more we gain. There is no such thing as a minor detail in Torah. Yaakov says in Pasuk Vav, Vayihili Shor Bachamor, which we note, of course, is in the singular, and Rashi comments about that. It could be the generic singular, Shor Bachamor. Okay. Tzon ve'eved v'shivcha. What's interesting about this pasuk? Says Ramban, we should know a principle. If you've paid attention, you should notice this. Whenever there are different types of animals mentioned in the pasuk, tzon is always mentioned first. When Avram is kaved ma'od, he's first, it's tzon. And anyone who, whenever their assets are listed, it is always tzon first. And there is a reason for that, says Ramban. Because tzon takes pride of place when the Torah lists things, because tzon, the flock, is where most korbanos come from. So if we can imagine there is a hierarchy of different types of animals, indeed there is, and tzon will come first, because it is closest to the Mizbeach. And here we have an anomaly. It's interesting. There are three types of animals mentioned, and tzon is lost. Vayili shor v'chamor, tzon? That's Ramban's question. Why is tzon third and not first? And Ramban says, once again, the more we appreciate the delicate nature of the situation here, we'll understand straight away. Tzon should be first. But Yaakov does not wish to put the word tzon at the head of any list when he's talking to Esav. Because isn't their contention of all of these years based on the fact that Yaakov went into Yitzchak pretending to be Esav? And how did he pull off the Ish Seir? Lechno el hatzon. So tzon is not a happy word for Esav to hear from Yaakov. If that's the first thing he hears, he may see red again. And therefore Yaakov has tzon, but it doesn't head off the list. Yaakov says, Vayehi li shor v'chamor tzon, eved v'shivcha. He kind of tucks it in there unobtrusively, and that's an amazing ta'ara. The more we are familiar with the specifics of how the psukim normally speak, the more we'll catch when things are somewhat different. And now, the malachim come back. Posuk zayin v'yashuva ha-malachim el Yaakov le'mor. So they return, and they say, Bono malachich al Esav, we came to Esav, v'gam ha-lech li'korscha v'abarmos isha imo. He is coming to meet you with 400 men, and it sounds like he's not coming to make a kiddush for you. He's coming for a confrontation. And once again, the Ramban. We can learn a great deal about the diyukim of the psukim, about the nuances of the psukim, by paraphrasing the pasuk into our own words and seeing the difference between what we say the pasuk says and what the pasuk actually says. If we would translate, we would say the messengers came back. We came to your brother Esav, and he's coming to meet you with 400 men. That's quite accurate. But we've missed out a word, and rightly so, because we wouldn't know what to do with it. They say, "Ba'anu alachicha al Esav, ve'gam holeich likroscha." Literally, and also, he's coming to meet you. What's the problem? Says Ramban, you cannot begin the news with the word "also." That is the only thing that they're telling him that he doesn't already know. "Ba'anu alachicha al Esav" is, you sent us there, we came. That's so far nothing has happened. The apostle could have said, and he is coming to meet you. That's the news. But also implies they've already said something that Yaakov didn't know. Not only A, but also B. There is no A. There's only one thing for them to report. And that is that Esav is coming. So what is the word v'gam doing in the pasuk? It's an interesting shaila. And therefore the Ramban explains, al derech hapshat, that there are, in fact, two pieces of news in this pasuk. The first is contained within the words "Banu alachicha el Esav," not so much by what is said, but by what isn't said. After all, why are they saying we came to Esav? He sent them to Esav. Presumably, they fulfilled their mission. Unless we say, no, they needed to state everything you told us to do, we did. But if that's true, then they actually are missing information, because then they should have said, we came to Esav and we told him what you said and he's coming to meet you. So they confirmed that they did exactly half of what Yaakov told them to do. They confirmed that they went to Esav, but they don't say that they said anything to Esav. So decide, are you going to go over everything I told you to do, or are you just going to cut to the chase and tell me what's happening with Esav? They say we came to Esav, they don't say they said anything. Says Ramban, it seems, al derech hapshat, they never said anything to Esav, because Esav didn't agree to see them. He didn't agree to receive them. So they said, we came to Esav, and that's it. We couldn't do anything. That's number one, which doesn't sound very good. And there's more. V'gam holeich likroscha ba'arbe amos yishim. Not only did he not agree to meet us, he's actually on his way to meet you. So this is the Yishuv al derech hapshat, according to the Ramban. And what I would like to do now is to go over all of these questions again, this time through the eyes of one of the Talmidim of the Ramban, of his Beis HaMedrash, that is, and that is through the eyes of Rabbeinu Bachya. Rabbeinu Bachya, Talmud of the Rashba. The Rashba was a prime disciple of the Ramban. And Rabbeinu Bachya will open up the Parsha in a different way for us. What is the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach about? It's about the confrontation between Yaakov and Esav. So it is. Now, as we know, later on in the Perek, in Pasuk Kafhei, we have another confrontation of sorts. By Yivoser Yaakov Levado, by Yeovik Ish Imo. Someone is struggling with him. And who is that someone? Chazal tell us, Rashi quotes, Soro Shel Esav. That means that Yaakov's confrontation with Esav takes place on two planes. The night before he meets him physically, he struggles with what Esav represents spiritually. Vayeovek Ishimo, Adalo Sashachar. That is confrontation number one. Number two, the second aspect, the second dimension, will come on the morrow when he meets Esav in the flesh. And that is described, each section in its place, in Parshas Vayishlach. But the more we understand that Yaakov's meeting with Esav, his confrontation with Esav, has two aspects to it, has a dual nature to it, has to take place on two planes. And when we come back to the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach, which represents his opening message, so if the confrontation is on two planes and he's sending a message, the message itself will also consist of two elements. There will be a duality within the message. There are certain things that he is saying to Esav the person, and there are certain things that he is saying to Soro Shel Esav. And we'll understand that his relationship on these, in terms of the spiritual confrontation, has a very different tone than the physical confrontation. As we know, it is not unusual, and certainly we find that explicitly here, that his tone with Esav the person is conciliatory. To make the peace. Don't be angry with me. Let's try and work things out. That's not a relationship that a person can have with Soro Shel Esav. Soro Shel Esav representing the forces of evil, one is not meant, nor do we find that the approach is that one of reconciliation. No hard feelings. It's to the hilt. It's a confrontation. The battle with the forces of evil, there's no aspect of appeasement there. And thus we find the two messages that Yaakov gives from the very beginning in Lavan Garti. What does he mean in Lavan Garti? Explanation number one. I wasn't such an important person. Please don't be angry with me. That's a pshat message. It's meant for Esav the person. Esav, the human being, when he hears that, that's something that he'll relate to. And that is considered an appropriate, given the circumstances, an appropriate way to approach Esav. But then there's another message going out to Soro Shel Esav. Yaakov is not interested in being friends with Soro Shel Esav. They'll never be friends. He's not even meant to adopt that approach. It's got to be a struggle from the outset. And therefore, as he presents his credentials to Soro Shel Esav, the word Garti is a carrier for a subliminal message. Tarig mitzvah shamarti, let the confrontation begin. And therefore, in response to our question, would Esav have the presence of mind to unravel a gematria at that time, of all things? Unlikely. The gematria is not for Esav. The gematria is for Soro Shel Esav, and Soro Shel Esav knows exactly what Yaakov means. And Esav doesn't get any of that, and it's that part is not meant for him. The gashmius of the message is for Esav the person, the ruchnius of the message is for Soro Shel Esav. And moreover, because it continues, if we go back to Pasuk Vav, Vayhili Shor V'chamor, and the Medrash begins, we've spoken about this Alderech HaPshat, Shor V'chamor, there first, and they're in the singular. Well, it could be a generic plural, and there's reasons why tzon is not mentioned. That's Alderech HaPshat. And Alderech HaMedrash says the Bereshis Rabbah, Shor V'chamor are two of Yaakov's finest assets. They are two of his sons. Shor Who is Shor? Yosef. Bechor Sharo, Hadarlo. And who is Chamor? Yisachar. Yisachar Chamor Gorim. These are heavyweight personalities within Yaakov's arsenal. The Koach of Yosef, he is Sitno Shel Esav, Zvulun, Yode bin, Yisachar, Yode bin Le'itim. And once again, it's very much along the lines of Tirag Mitzah Shamarti. These are my spiritual assets. Tirag Mitzvahs, I have a son like Yosef, I have a son like Yisachar. Now, at this stage, gematrias aside, there is no way in the world that Esav could decode a message like that, because it is based on psukim that haven't been said, some of them by people who haven't even been born. Who is Shor? Well, Chamor is easier. Why? Because Chamor is Yisachar, Yisachar Chamor Gorim. Everyone knows that. Why? Because everyone learned Parshas Vayechi, which Yaakov will say in a few decades' time. But to expect Esav to be a baki in Chumash Bereishis, which is yet a work in the making, and thus to unravel the intent of Yaakov, that's a little much. And moreover, Shor, who is Shor? Yosef, Bechor Shoro Hadolo. Everyone knows that. Simbazos HaBracha. If you've been to Shul and Simchas Torah, so you'll know that Yosef is the Shor. Okay. That's a pasuk that will be said by Moshe Rabbeinu in hundreds of years' time. So, in terms of decrypting the message, it doesn't sound like Esav really has a chance. So, for whose benefit is it? Says Rabbeinu Bachya, Soro Shel Esav. Soro Shel Esav has all of this information at his disposal. He knows who Shor is. Who knows who Chamor is. Those are concepts. Those are principles that are already true. They will be enunciated, each one in its time. And then, says Rabbeinu Bachya, the more we understand that there are actually, given the nature that the dual nature of the confrontation, there is a dual tone to every aspect of the message, we can come back and ask the question, what is the meaning of the word? Vayishlach Yaakov malachim lefonav. What does the word malachim mean? Well, we saw two approaches in the Bereishis Rabba. Some say it means messengers, people. Others say malachim mamish, says the Rabbeinu Bachya. Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim chayim. Both of them have a place. Because Yaakov is sending two types of messages. He's sending one message to Esav, the person. What type of messenger would you choose to send a message to a person? A person. And therefore, corresponding to the words that are said to Esav, he sent people, says Rabbeinu Bachya. How do you send a message to Soroshel Esav? What are you going to use? A malach. And therefore, the word malachim, which incorporates both human messengers, human emissaries, and malachim, each one carries a different aspect of the message to its destination. And then, says Rabbeinu Bachya, if we come back to the Ramban's question, Bonu elachicha el Esav, v'gam holech likrosecha. Now, al derech hapshat, the Ramban raised a difficulty. You've only said one thing. How can you introduce that one thing with the word v'gam? You can't start a sentence with and also. But the word v'gam, as we know, al derech hamedrash, is a ribuy. It comes to denote another entity along with the one being spoken about in the pasuk. Es and gam are ribuyim. So Esav is coming to meet you, and so is someone else. Gam l'rabos. Who else is coming? Soro Shel Esav. They're both on the way. Yaakov needs to take the appropriate precautions and make the appropriate preparations. So this is an altogether different approach to the beginning of Parshas Vayishlach. Now, from here, still with Rabbeinu Bachya, actually, he has three different explanations as with regards to the struggle of Yaakov with the Malach, and we'll take a look at one of them. Interestingly, Yaakov, it's considered a great achievement and a great event for him that he successfully confronted Soro Shel Esav, so much so that he calls the place after that event. In Pasuk Lamed Hey, pardon me, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, it says, after the whole confrontation is over, and we will yet go back to those psukim, Vayikra Yaakov Shema Mokam Peniel, he calls the place afterwards. As the Mefarshim say, if you see a place where a nes was done for you, make a bracha. He renamed the place after this event. Why is he called a Peniel? Ki ro'isi Elohim here as a Malach panim upanim fatinatzel nafshi, and he was saved. Vayizrach lo Hashemesh, and the sun shone for him. Kasher over es Penuel u'tzolei adirecha. He was limping, but he was getting better already. And what's very interesting is, we see that within the space of one pasuk, and I'm not sure, I don't know offhand if this place will ever be mentioned again, it's actually undergone a change. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, he called it Peniel. In Pasuk Lamed Beis, it has become Penuel. And those are not exactly the same thing. It's largely the same, but it's not exactly the same. And the two pasukim back to back. So how did Peniel, having been called such by Yaakov, become Penuel? Who called it that? Now, the difficult point, the delicate point with regards to the confrontation with Sarah Shel Esav is if Sarah Shel Esav is himself a malach, then there is a good chance that this confrontation took place on a spiritual plane. As much as there is no avoiding the fact that the result left a physical impact when Yaakov wakes up, he is limping. But nonetheless, the crux of the matter, it's not going to be who's physically stronger, Yaakov or Sarah Shel Esav. It's going to be a spiritual confrontation of sorts. And if that is the case, we need to understand, to the degree that we can, what is this confrontation about? Well, in a sense, Yaakov, who represents the forces of good, who represents the tzaddik, his nefesh spends its time in this world housed in a body, connected to a physical being. And really the question as to the measure of the level of Yaakov is, to what degree, if any, he has allowed his physical existence to impact on his spiritual essence. There is a point of fusion, and one can affect the other. And the extent to which he has, if he has overly invested or overly indulged in the physical world, that means that will leave an impact on his spiritual essence. And if that is true, then Sarah Shel Esav will already have a certain hold over him, because Yaakov is no longer on a madrega where he is able to assert himself fully over the forces of evil. And so, if we would describe in our words, what is the confrontation about, essentially it's an examination of Yaakov's essence, of his nefesh, to see whether or not it has become physical or affected by his physical element. And so, Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Kaf Hei, is now read quite differently. For given the nature of the struggle as we have just described it, the pasuk says, "Vayivaser Yaakov levado." Yaakov remained alone by himself. Now, what does that mean? How many ways are there to be alone? Well, the simple understanding that I think we would have is that there was no one else there. So he was alone in the sense that it was just Yaakov and no one else. Says Rabbeinu Bachya, "Vayivaser Yaakov levado" means that Yaakov remained absolutely alone. That is to say, Yaakov himself is his soul. He has a body, but the time has come to examine Yaakov himself. And therefore, as he ascends into a spiritual plane where he will be able to do battle with Soresh el Esav, the only way to become more alone, even when there's no one else there anyway, is to become detached even from one's physical self. That's hispodidus, actually, self-aloneness. That's an altogether different understanding of Vayivosa Yaakov Levada, just Yaakov, just the essence of Yaakov. Why? Because now he is on a plane where he can engage in Soresh el Esav. And what happens? Vayivek ish imo. Now, the practical translation is someone struggled with him. It's true. And from there, the word ma'avak is a struggle. But of course, the word vayivek derives from the word avak, which means dust. And dust, of course, represents the most primal representation of physical existence. Dust, it's the lowest of physicality. Vayivek ish imo means whoever this ish was, Soresh el Esav, he's dusting him. He's dusting him over. He's looking for dust. That is to say, he's looking for traces of physicality within Yaakov. Is there any dust there? Adalos HaShachar. This took place, it was a night-long struggle. Yaakov needs to remain firm in his sense of pure spirituality once his nefesh is disengaged from his guf. And Vayakilo Yocholo, and as a matter of generality, Yaakov won. That is to say, in principle, Yaakov triumphed over Soresh el Esav. It is true that he sustained a certain injury. Vayiga b'chaf yerecho. The yerech represents the trunk of the body to the extent that it is inalienable and inevitable that there will be a certain point of connection between the spiritual and the physical. He is a physical person. And therefore, there is a certain mark that Soresh el Esav is able to leave on him. And he limps, but he recovers. And what's interesting is the bracha that's given to him, Pasuk Kaftes, once we understand, according to this analysis of Rabbeinu Bachya, which he calls Al Derech HaSeichel, the confrontation, so, Pasuk Kaftes, Vayomer lo Yaakov yameh ot shimcha. Do your name won't be called Yaakov anymore. Ki im Yisrael would be Yisrael. Ki sarisa im Elohim v'im anoshim v'tuchal. You struggled with spiritual forces. You struggled with mortals, and you prevailed, says Rabbeinu Bachya. Normally, the pasuk presents things in a progression of ascending chiddush. If you tell me that he prevailed when he struggled over with spiritual beings, so I would think that physical beings are relatively milder to deal with. But the pasuk says you fought with angels. And you prevailed. And you even fought with people and you prevailed. People, I would imagine, are less of a threat than evil angels. Says Rabbeinu Bachya, but not if you're looking to stay on level spiritually. Sometimes a person can lose his spirituality as much within the course of a physical struggle, perhaps even more, than with a spiritual struggle. If it's a spiritual struggle, you know that you need to remain spiritually on guard, because that's what the fight is about. But if it's a physical struggle, sometimes the spiritual side can take a fall because in the name of winning the physical fight, other things are put to the side. And therefore, to remain spiritually on level, as Yaakov has his confrontations with Lavan and with everyone else who he has to deal with and contend with, to remain spiritually on level, from a certain point of view, it's a greater achievement to have done that, having confronted people. And so, according to this understanding, the fight itself, the struggle itself, took place on an altogether more elevated plane. Now, of course, Yaakov will ultimately come back to earth, and he will resume his physical existence, having been thus vindicated. That transition is marked in the pasuk. Yaakov calls the place Peniel. And as he walks away, the Torah calls it Penuel. It's the same word, but what began with a Yud has become a Vav. The Yud, says Rabbeinu Bachya, represents spirituality. It is has the most minimal physical representation, it's the smallest of the letters. It is the only letter that floats actually above the surface. It does not rest on the ground. And it always represents thought, anything in the future which doesn't physically exist yet, but exists as an idea, as Yashir, is always represented by the Yud. And therefore, as Yaakov sees what's happened and sees that he's been successful, he calls it Peniel. But he is actually in the zone of the Yud. But from Pasuk Lamed Aleph to Lamed Beis is a transition as Yaakov resumes his physical existence. And that transition is marked by the shift from a Yud to a Vav. Because the Vav represents physicality, the six directions of extension, physical extension, the Sheshes Mehamase, and therefore when Peniel becomes Penuel, Yaakov goes from being Levado in that sense to back Yaakov in Yaakov's physical body as he then goes on to meet Esav himself. So these are very wonderful insights for things, psukim that we read the whole time to get a further understanding of them. And now, let us come to Yaakov's meeting with Esav, the person, which also happened. Then Perek Lamed Gimel. So there's elaborate preparations, and then Pasuk Dalet is when they actually meet. Vayaratz Esav likroso vayichabkehu. Esav runs to him and he hugs him. Vayipolat zavara vayishakehu. He falls on him and he kisses him. Vayivku. And they don't cry. Now, if you just have the words, difficult to know exactly what to make of that. The good news is Yaakov survived. What exactly is Esav thinking? We have no idea. Of course, we do note that the word Vayishakehu is unique because it has dots on top of the letters. Vayishakehu. And Rashi comments, and Rashi always comments on the dots. Because Rashi's job is to explain Pshuto Shel Mikra. Mikra means whatever's in the Pasuk. It's not a word, but it's in the Pasuk. It's in the Sefer Torah. And therefore Rashi will darshan all of the dots. And what is the meaning of these dots on Vishakehu? Once my son at the Shabbos table, when I asked him, but what do you think the dots are? So he says, well, his Rebbe taught him that the Medrash says that Esav tried to bite Yaakov's neck and his teeth fell out. So, I mean, here they are on top of the Vayishakehu. It's one approach. So Rashi says, Na Vayishakehu Nakudalav. There's Nakudas. There's dots. V'yesh Cholkin Badavar Hazeh. And actually, there's a bit of a machlokus. It's in the Sifrei, actually, I believe, in Parshas Shelach. V'yesh Cholkin Badavar Hazeh. Oh, Bebraisa de Sifrei. There are two different approaches. Yeshadarshu Nakudazu Lomar Shalonishako Becholibo. Some say that the Nakudas come to mean he didn't kiss him with a full heart. Okay. That's one approach. And then Omer Bishim Ben Yochai. Halochahi, you should know, it's a rule. Biyadua, She Esav Sona Li Yaakov. Esav hates Yaakov. Elo. So what's happening here? Shenichmu rechamav beosasha unishako b'cholibo. But there was a momentary lapse. Esav just couldn't control himself. His long-lost brother, b'cholzot. He hasn't seen him for so long. And just for that moment, he really did kiss him with all of his heart. What is the meaning of this? What is behind these two interpretations? And what do they have to do with the dots? Either of them. Did he yes kiss him with a full heart? Did he not kiss him with a full heart? Well, and how do the dots speak here? So the Maskil Ledovit explains, as we know, the Rashi has told us, the dots always come to, in a sense, take away from a certain point of view, a measure of what the word seems to be saying. They're almost like a bit of a qualification or a reservation. Now, if that's the case, then in a sense, Vayishakehu, which is such a loaded word, with dots on top, the dots are telling you that the way that you think it happened, it didn't exactly happen that way. So there, you have your intuition, and then the dots say, but it wasn't exactly that way. Not as much as you would have thought. So interestingly, the way you end up explaining the pasuk will depend on what your intuition was in the first place. What was your expectation that then becomes undone by the dots? And so that's really where the machlokus begins, between the Tanakhama and Rav Shimon ben Yochai. The Tanakhama, that is to say the first opinion in the Sifrei, his understanding was that all things being equal, if I didn't know anything else, I would have assumed that, you know, after 22 years, it would have been, he would have melted. Just momentarily. I would have thought that when he kissed him, when the pasuk says he kissed him, then it was for real, and it was with a whole heart. Because he would have thought that, so then he responds to the pasuk, which is saying, but it's not what you would have thought, to say, and you know what? And even then he didn't do it. Lo nishako b'chol libo. So the conclusion is a function of your expectation, because whatever direction you were heading in, the dots take you back the other way. So the first opinion was heading in the direction of b'chol libo, so the dots say it wasn't b'chol libo. His machlokus with Rav Shimon ben Yochai is because Rav Shimon ben Yochai has no such expectation. Rav Shimon ben Yochai says, there's halacha here. Esav hates Yaakov. And this is a halacha that he likes to keep. And he's very makbid about it. So there is no expectation. 22 years is nothing. And therefore, had the pasuk just said Vayishakehu, I would have thought it was very, very little happening there. And then the dots come. And it's not what you would have thought. That's amazing. It was a miracle. A freak of nature. That he kissed him with his whole heart. So that's how to understand this very interesting machlokas as to what to make of these dots on Vishake. I would say there is another aspect here which raises a question that I'm not entirely sure how to answer, but I think it's worthwhile mentioning. And it begins with a comment of Rav Wolf Heidenheim, who was one of the great Baalei Haloshon, and he is quoted by the Ksav HaKabbal in Parshas Vayigash. You see, there are two ways that the Torah will describe one person kissing another. There is the word Vayishak, and the word Vayinashek. Now sometimes you find one, mostly Vayishak actually, and once in a while you find Vayinashek, and in a sense they both sound like the same thing. What is the difference between them? Says the Ksav HaKabbalah, the difference between them is, quoting Rav Wolf Heidenheim, is actually, if we know the grammatical form between them, is Vayishak is the kal. It's more or less straightforward, Vayishak. Vayinashek is a PL. It's more emphatic, it's more forceful, PL. As we would say, if we would compare the words shavar and shiber, vayishbor and vayishaber, vayishbor would be translated as he broke. Vayishaber would be translated as he smashed. The PL is an intense form of the kal. And so it is, therefore, that we find that throughout the Torah, the norm is when relatives kiss each other or whatever it is, the word is vayishak. Because it's within the course of normalcy and there's nothing unduly intense. And that's vayishak. When Yaakov kisses Yitzhak, it's vayishak. And so it goes. Once in a while you find vayinashek. When Yosef was reunited with his brothers after 22 years in Parshas Vayigash, it says vayinashek l'chol echav. Yes, that deserves a PL. That was a very intense moment. And that's the rule. Interestingly, I believe this may be part of what's behind the Rashi last week in Parshas Vayetze, when Yaakov has his first meeting with Lavan. And of course, and the pasuk says, "Vayoretz likroso," and he hugged him, and he kissed him, and Rashi gives us a running commentary of thermal vision as to what's going on. what looks like he hugs him and he kissed him because he was expecting to be loaded with money. Because his father's Eved came a few years ago with 10 camels full of everything. And he's the man himself. He's now the master. One could only imagine what he's going to have with him. And he started running. And then he saw Yaakov with nothing and he slowed down. And then he hugged him. Why did he hug him? Because he says, that he must be carrying valuables, something. So the working translation of a yichabek, though, which literally means he hugged him, but practically means he frisked him. Belaz. A credit card. Something. Nothing. And then he kissed him. Why is he kissing him, says Rashi. This is not emotional. This is dental. He's looking for diamonds. And he found nothing. It was a great disappointment. First of many, for Lavan. The question is, how do we know? As if to say, listen, this family, so he hugged him and he kissed him. Is it only because we can be Derish Lignai that we are? Maybe it was an innocent hug and a kiss. But the point is, the Pasuk says, Vayaretz Likroso, Vayichabek Lo, he hugged him, Vayinashek Lo. What's Vayinashek Lo? What's that doing here? Why the emotion? You never met him before. What are you going to do? Catch up on old times? So for a first meeting, it's way too intense for what the situation warranted, unless there's another motive behind the intensity of Vayinashek Lo. Of course, it's not just a perfunctory kiss, right? Tooth by tooth, because he's looking for diamonds. So it's Vayinashek Lo, and that, of course, sets the tone for everything. Now, that being the case, so if we return to our Rashi and Vayishakehu, in a sense, it raises a question mark in both directions, if we are to apply the above distinction. For the Pasuk says Vayishakehu, and there's dots on top, and there's two expressions, and in a sense, it's the same question could be asked in two different directions. According to the first opinion, it says that the reason why there's dots on top is because to tell you that he didn't kiss him with a full heart. And at this point, we could ask, well, why would we need dots to tell us that? The very fact that it used the word Vayishakehu and not Vayinashkehu, that itself, the grammar alone should speak and tell us that it obviously wasn't with a full heart. That's it. Just a hug and that's it. So the word itself should speak. And as we move to Reb Shimon ben Yochai, who says that the dots are coming to tell you that he really did kiss him with all of his heart, so then we could ask, well, instead of using the word Vayishakehu with dots, why not change it to Vayinashkehu, which once again will give us that understanding that it was Bechol Libo, as the situation warranted. Presumably there are levels in between, as if to say there is the basic Vayishakehu with higher or lower Bechol Libo, not yet in the zone of Vayinashkehu. But these are important points to look out for. The final comment with regards to this meeting with Esav, especially Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai's expression, Halacha hi biyadua Esav sona li Yaakov. It's an interesting expression. Halacha hi. What type of halacha is it? We could say it's a rule. It's a force of nature. But he says biyadua, it's known. What is the meaning of halacha hi? And there's a very, well, contains within it an enormous amount. The comment of Rav Menachem Zemba, Hashem Yom Domo. He was gone in Warsaw. He died in the Warsaw Ghetto. He was one of the rabbinic figures behind the uprising at the time, and he himself was killed there. And there is a volume of his collected writings and speeches and comments. And there, already, people can tell what's happening. And he discusses the issue of anti-Semitism. And Rav Zemba says, there's many theories. And of course, what's behind every theory is, if this is what's behind it, then if we do things slightly differently, then it will solve it. And we're still looking. We're still looking for solutions. Says Rav Menachem Zemba, the one who said these words, Reb Shimon ben Yochai, is famous throughout the Shas for being Dorish Taima Dekra. That means when the Torah says something, Reb Shimon's approach is to ponder and to present why it is that the Torah said it, and sometimes with halachic ramifications. When the Torah says not to take a pledge security from a widow, says Reb Shimon ben Yochai, it's because you have to return it regularly and you can ruin her reputation. It's Dorish Taima Dekra. The Torah just says don't do it, says Reb Shimon ben Yochai, but this is what's behind it. So if there's anyone who would ever be able to tell you what's behind something in the Torah, that's Reb Shimon ben Yochai's expertise. And he never fails, except for on this halacha, this one halacha that he could not explain. Esav sona li Yaakov. So we turn to Reb Shimon ben Yochai. Explain it to us. Why? How can we understand it? And what can we do to fix it? And the one person that we look towards lifts up his hands and says, it's just a halacha. I don't know. That's just how it is. If there was a reason, I would tell it to you. But instead of looking for reasons, none of which ever end up working well for us, we just need to live life as Jews for the sake of fulfilling our tafkid in this world with life as Jews, not for the sake of appeasing those who are halachically bound for forces that even they cannot explain. To be against us. And that was true from the time of Esav, and unfortunately we don't exult in this fact, and we don't celebrate it. But even things that we don't celebrate need to be recognized. And here's the halacha even Reb Shimon ben Yochai cannot explain. Now towards the end of the parsha, we have the descendants of Esav, and the Torah describes them at length, great length in fact. And I would like to take a look in Perek Lamed Vav at one of the better known personalities, not for noble reasons. Perek Lamed Vav, Pasuk Yud Aleph and Yud Beis. Eliphaz, who was known to us through the Medrash as the one who took all of Yaakov's money. He is the son of Esav. Vayu b'nei Eliphaz, Teman, Omar, Tzofor, v'gatam, u'kenaz. So he had these five sons. V'timna ha'isa pilegesh, l'Eliphaz ben Esav. And Timna was his pilegesh, his concubine. V'teda l'Eliphaz es ha'molek. And she bore Amalek. So in Perek Yud Aleph, you have five sons of Eliphaz. In Pasuk Yud Aleph. And in Pasuk Yud Beis, we have Timna enters the scene, and from that union is Amalek. The Ramban says something which is quite a chiddush, because he raises a question that if he didn't ask it as such, we may not have thought that it was a question. Ramban says, the Torah does tell us in Chumash Devarim that we need to deal to a certain degree with, at the very least decency, with Esav, with the descendants of Esav. Lo tisa'ev Adomi. Do not detest the Adomi, ki achichahu. Amazing, but that's pasuk in Parshas Kiseitse. Lo tisa'ev Adomi, ki achichahu. That said, says Ramban, one of the descendants of Esav does not have such courtesy afforded to him, and that's Amalek, because the Torah has other things to say about the way to relate to Amalek, namely, to completely destroy them. And therefore Ramban raises the question, how can it be in light of the fact that as a matter of generality we need to be cordial to Bnei Esav, so how was Amalek different? That's his question. I have to say, I mean, one could have said in a Balabatisha ofen that Amalek disqualified. In other words, one can't understand, there are certain caveats. Be cordial with Bnei Esav unless they try and wipe you out. In which case, there's a change in policy. So, it didn't come from us. So, he missed out on the courtesy that's afforded to everybody else. And no doubt the Ramban is aware that one could say that. But he actually says something else. From a certain point of view, says Ramban, it seems to me that Amalek is not considered to be part of Esav's family in every sense of the word. And the reason why is because he was born by his son Eliphaz and his Pelegesh Timnah. She wasn't his full wife. As surely as, and therefore you'll see, says Rabban, he doesn't live with the rest of Bnei Esav. And as Sarah said, Ki lo yurash ben ha'oma hazos in Bnei Yitzhak, because Yishmael came from Hagar, who was not a full wife to Avram, so he's not going to be part of the inheritance, and neither was Amalek for Esav. And thus, says Ramban, there ultimately is actually no friction between these two directives. When the Torah says, be cordial and courteous to the descendants of Esav, that's the actual descendants of Esav, in the full sense of the word. Here, Amalek, from Timnah, he's in a separate pasuk, and he's in a separate category, in every respect. That's a chiddush. Now, these words, v'timna ha'isa pilegesh, were the source of a famous discussion in the Gemara, because in Masechah Sanhedrin, Daf Tzadik Tes, Amud Beis, which discusses psukim in the Torah, and the messages they contain, and the Gemara discusses the severity of a person not appreciating the fact that everything in the Torah has something to tell us. And in fact, someone who goes down in infamy as missing out on this point is Menashe Melech Yehuda. Because, as the pasuk in Parsha Shelach, Vanefesh Ashetase Biyad Roma, a person who acts brazenly against the Torah, the pasuk says, Hikores Tikores. It is of the severest sins to relate to the Torah in that way. And who, unfortunately, is the classic embodiment of that? The Menashe ben Chizkiah. He would sit and poke fun at the Torah. What did he say? Amar, did Moshe have nothing better to do with his time than to write the brother, the sister of Lotan is Timnah, that's all he found time to write in the Torah. And that's how Menashe, the son of Chizkiah, would relate to things. And his end was disaster. I mean, were it not for the fact that he was scooped up mamish at the end. But where he was headed towards, others have followed him and did not come back. And in a sense, therefore, v'timna ha'isa pilegesh represents almost the epitome of words that, on the face of it, have nothing to tell us. What do we learn in life from v'timna ha'isa pilegesh? If she was a pilegesh, she wasn't a pilegesh, telifas, what's it got to do with me? So interestingly, the Gemara says, okay, you've identified Menashe as being severely wrong for saying that, because the point is there is something to learn. So now that we've discussed it, so what is there to learn from it? Says the Gemara, Da'asan Allah, now that we've come to speak about it, right? Achos Lotan Timna Maihi. What do we learn from the fact that she was the sister of Lotan and she was a Pilegesh? And says the Gemara, Timna Bas Melochim Havai. She was born of royalty. That's what we learn from the fact that she's the sister of Lotan, because Lotan is an aluf, right? He's a chief. He's a family head. She was of high society. And boy le'aguri. And she wanted to convert. Basa etel Avram Yitzhak v'Yaakov v'lo kibluha. So she came to Avram Yitzhak and Yaakov, and they didn't accept her. So then what? So, plan B. Holcha v'haisa pilegesh, lelifas v'neifas. So she became a pilegesh, lelifas. How does that become her backup plan? Because, Omra, mutav, teshivcha le'umazu, I prefer to be a handmaiden somehow to this family, v'lo te'gevir le'umacheres, as opposed to just going back and be a princess over whoever she was part of the ruling family. It says the Gemara, nafak mina Amalek, t'tzarinu li'Yisrael. Amalek came from her, caused a great deal of trouble to Yisrael. So in fact, those two psukim, number one, identifying Timnah as the sister of Lotan, and then telling her what happened to her, she became the Pilegesh of Eliphaz, that tells us her whole story. Now interestingly, Rebbe Uvra Margolius and the Sefer Margolius Hayam and Sanhedrin tells us that there are actually two versions of this story in the Gemara. One version, one nusach, that is to say, in manuscript, the Gemara ends there. And so the end of the story is, and Amalek came out and caused a great deal of trouble to Yisrael. And the intent of the Gemara told that way is to say that to vindicate Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov for not accepting her, because they must have seen something terribly wrong within her. And look, Amalek came out. That's the end of the story. It's not for nothing that they didn't accept her. Our version of the Gemara has a few extra words. When it says Amalek came out, of course, that's trouble. My timer. Why? Because they shouldn't have distanced her. In other words, according to those final words in our Gemara, the trouble that Amalek has caused for the Jewish people is somehow traced back and is a repercussion. Not as a validation, but as a response to the fact that they didn't accept her. Now, Chaim Shmulevitz says, when you think about it, the whole story is very unusual, because they must have had a reason not to accept her. After all, the job of Avram is to be Megayer people. That was his profession, to accept people. Everyone who came from some type of background, which means that if she was interviewed by Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov and failed, there must have been something terribly wrong. In other words, if there was with her, because if there was only any way that they could have seen room for her within what was then the Jewish people, for want of a better expression, they would have welcomed her with open arms. They were looking for people. Avram is traveling around Israel, Vayikov Hashem Hashem, and people are coming to him. So if they held her at arm's length, they must have seen something. And still, the Gemara says, but they should have accepted her. Whatever it was, they should have accepted her. And Reb Chaim suggests, it takes a great man to say this, like Reb Chaim Shulevitz, that in a sense, what Amalek represents from that point onwards, a shakar chabaderech, a certain cooling of our relationship with Torah, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with spirituality, a shakar chabaderech is perhaps a reverberation of the cool reception, of the somewhat distant reception that the mother, Timna, got from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And that is something that continues until our times. So these are some of the lessons from Vayishlach. Of course, our confrontations with Esav in every sense of the word continue until today, whether it's him or his proxies or his emissaries or his Middle Eastern friends. And the lessons from Vayishlach are in demand to be learnt today, as always. We'll leave it over there for the scene.